No, no, we need something that's organically terrible that we then put in.
This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, listeners. We're here for a treat of indie comic book noise. We had our tricks last time, so time for our treats this time.
So Super Steve is here?
No, Super Steve is not here. He only shows up for special important episodes.
Oh.
But this is important to our hearts because we at least were able to lure Phil, the Ottawa Otter, out of his den.
I think I'm going to embrace that name.
Good.
And just let it happen now. I no longer hate that name.
Good.
Although I would have preferred something like Phil from the House of Horrors or something, but I guess I'll go with it.
Well, it's not very Canadian, so no. We have to stick with it. And then we have WWX dialing in from the icebox. What's going on, Kev?
Well, everyone tells me. I did market research, and Ottawa Otter, very memorable.
See? That's why I'm embracing it. You stroke my ego up.
And then rounding out the cast of characters for tonight is myself, Andrew the LA Rabbit. Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. All kinds of great shows you can check out there, including shows about other media properties, and more particularly other comic book stuff. I happen to enjoy Marvel Noise, and not just the ones that I'm on with Kevin.
I like the ones Jerry McDade is on.
Yeah, I just heard they did a marvelous two-part Halloween episode.
Oh, cool.
Where they wrap up their multi-year coverage of the Tomb of Dracula comic from Marvel's 70s up into the 80s, and then did a little bonus Dracula coverage on top. Great stuff, great stuff. I even shot him a Twitter link to what apparently was a animated adaptation that Sunbow did of Tomb of Dracula that is available on the YouTubes. And it is, it's a little rough, boys. It's not,
yeah.
Not Gentleman Gene colon artwork, for sure.
So it's Australian Dracula?
And I've additionally, maybe featured on a future episode, purchased their follow-up series that they did at Dark Horse called The Curse of Dracula. I just picked that trade up. It came out, 12 years ago, something in that range. And it was kind of their take on the character, obviously at a different company. So you can't have all those X-Men and Spider-Men and everything showing up. But when that makes its way to my doorstop, maybe it will make its way onto Indie Comic Book Noise. You can find old episodes of Indie Comic Book Noise on our website, in addition to whatever podcast catcher you're currently using. The website, what's the website, Kevin?
IndieComicBookNoise.com. HTTP /.
That's too hard for people to remember.
We also have presence on social media. You can find Twitter handle for IndieComicBookN due to character lengths. And we have personal handles. And there's a Facebook fan page.
Yay. Purportedly.
We really keep a very loose remit here at Indie Comic Book Noise. We basically just talk about the comic books and related media properties and, you know, whatever organically flows from those discussions. We avoid generally talk that strictly links to the big two, but
that's
given...
That's fucking bullshit.
Given that it's a...
all the time.
Given that it's a small industry, there is inevitable crossover, you know, but indie comics consider everything from, you know, Dog Man, which is hardly indie, all the way to the independent comics that Kevin himself produced. So we've got the range of everything and also the range of how it interacts. And we just sort of bat it around and talk about what we feel like till it goes. Also, as you heard from the beginning, there is a warning on the show. Phil got us our blue label with that expletive outbursts, but it's really just some bad language and some adult themes. We're really about the least controversial podcast out there. I edit out all the really crazy stuff that Phil and Kevin say.
I think you've been more blue than all of us.
Well, that's just because I take out all the stuff that I can't have our sainted listeners listening to from YouTube. But here we are, gentlemen. We've wrapped up Halloween, had our All Saints Day, getting ready to head into American Thanksgiving. What are you boys been into on the comic book front?
Oh, good thing you specified.
Because I have a couple of doozies, but I feel like I've been given all that beginning chitter chatter, so I don't like to jump right in. I like to, you know, pass the microphone.
Well, I have doubled the books since we didn't record. Peek behind the curtain. Since we didn't record last week, I've doubled the books now.
Well,
is one of them Fearless Dawn Meets Hellboy?
No.
Oh. What? Oh, disappointed.
No, I kept on putting that up to, and then I keep on hearing, no, not yet, not yet. And then I don't get around to it.
Yeah, I said for next time. Is this not next time?
But this was supposed to be not next time. It was supposed to be next time. This is the actual current time, not next time. So I thought next time would be next time.
It was one of my Halloween comics, so that's why I was saving it.
Oh.
Phil, as someone who tries to organize the recordings, if you're dealing with Kevin, you need specific dates referenced. Yeah, you can't just say days of the week or next time or this time or whatever. Because I guarantee you, he will find a way to have the wrong day. Or you say the date and the time, preferably twice in the email.
All right, so next time?
Yeah, maybe next time.
Yeah, great. Okay. So we're never covering that comic. All right, Kevin, so what do you have?
We only find them when they're dead.
Oh, that's the space one?
Yeah, space one.
Yeah.
By Al Ewing and Simone de Mayo, I'm assuming. So I don't have any fancy variant for this one. I noticed Boom Studios is doing a lot of those one per store variant deals. I don't know, it seems to be a popular thing that... I don't think they're the only one that does it, but you know, they keep on trying to find new ways to make another variant cover, or I guess reward retailers, or
yeah. Or you can wait for the trade and get all the covers.
Yeah, I guess you could do that theoretically.
Have they reached dynamite levels of like 75 variant covers for each number one?
No. That's what I find it weird. Sometimes, like, people get on, like, Marvel or whoever's case. But it's, like, that Ninja Turtles Last Ronin, like, I think they were up to, like, it was like, 86 cover. It was ridiculous. And then, but it's, like, you'll never see all of them because there's a large quantity in there of just retailer store. Like, their specific variants made for their store. So it's just so crazy.
Yeah, I wonder if you're a variant person, do you have any urge to get those? I mean, I don't think you would because they're... I mean, sometimes they have a separate artist, but isn't it normally just, like, they put a little reference to the store and it's not like it's a completely different cover?
I don't know because I know some people saying, oh, there's some variants, so destine that. Because... But I'm always thinking... The regular audience, like, never sees or never knows about some of these things. So it's like they basically don't exist. But at some point, like, it must be a turnoff for even variant collectors. Like, that's just too much.
I don't know how many regular people are getting books. And I've bought a lot of Boom books, but I don't know if you remember my story from about 15 years ago or so, I went into the comic book shop and asked for a Boom book, and the guy looked at me like, I don't think it's like a reach the level of pop culture ubiquity. I mean, even their biggest licenses like Lumberjanes or... And they have a Power Rangers book. I just don't know that they have the kind of distribution outside of the comic book shop crowd that would generate a lot of, like, civilians buying Boom books. I don't know.
I feel like there has to be some... Like, I think they've gotten better in, like, recent years. Like, I think they had some... When they first started out, they had some interesting books, but I don't think anyone knew who they were. And, like, you know, maybe you don't have as many licenses, and you have some... Like, I think there was... I was interested in Boom. Then there was sort of, like, that mid-period where, like, I wasn't getting anything. And then I feel like they've captured, like, my attention, but also, like outside the direct market type of thing, like, with some YA material and stuff. Like, I feel like they're in a new phase of the company right now.
I think you're right. They came on my... I mean, not that I bought little issues here and there, but they really came on to my radar with the Stan Lee imprint. I want to say it was 5 or 6 titles. I don't think they lasted more than about 2 or 3 years, but I really enjoyed all of them. They got, you know, pretty decent names, well-recognized talent to work on them, and they were interconnected. And that was kind of, I mean, I had picked up, you know, there was some crime books they had. They also did a bunch of genres, but you're right. Yeah. I think then they went big into license, because didn't they have Adventure Time and stuff like that? Or
well, those were enjoyable if you liked Adventure Time. But it's more
the regular show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But IDW did the same thing. They kind of went down that way too.
I know it's funny that they're both in the front of the previous catalog, because I think in the license front, there's a lot of similarity between them.
Well, with the exception of Image, are any of those front of the, you know, their license books are pretty key if you want to make that second tier public. You know, if you're not Marvel or DC or Image, I think license books are, at least at some point in your history, they're going to be part of your diet because they help raise your profile.
I think so. And they've put like a lot of different indie guys, like on the, I know, especially with the Adventure Time, like a lot of different people like that. So it's not just like straightforward stuff. Like you're seeing a lot of different stuff. A lot of different people and styles and everything, so it's not boring.
Well, certainly they can also maybe lure them in for a cover or something, too.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of the property, oh, yeah, it'd be cool to do a Rick and Morty cover or whatever. Whatever the property is you like.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so you're going to tell us about this book.
Yeah, it's weird. I think I've heard someone describe this one as like, oh, he couldn't use this idea at Marvel because it seems like the Celestials are in here or something. And I'm like, maybe, but it also doesn't seem super crazy. Or like they're like, oh, they're all walking around naked and there's a lot of swearing. Like it's not like I don't think it's that crazy that you wouldn't be able to fit this in somewhere.
I agree. And I also think that, look, Marvel's had its share. They had the, when I was young, the Epic line, and then Marvel Knights. Like, they've had their share of, if they find some book that needs a bit of an edgier tone, they've certainly branched out into imprints that allow that.
And speaking of licenses, Marvel's getting quite a few licenses now, too.
They seem like good money. I mean, it's hard to, I know you lose some paying the license holder, but you also have a built-in audience.
Yeah, I wonder if it must be a greater benefit to a smaller company than Marvel. Like, I mean, they're putting top talents.
Not to be cynical, but I also feel like, and I know this has been levied against Marvel, and I think fairly, one of their other strategies is just crowd out the marketplace. If you can put out a ton of content that shop owners and customers feel they have, then that crowds out the other littler guys. And they end, even if the books aren't selling great, in some ways, if you have four kind of lower selling books, well, that's comic book stores, because it's non-refundable. All those owners are putting their own money out to get the books. So I think that I've always found that to be a somewhat compelling argument. Like I said, it is cynical.
So, yeah, the whole, we only find them when they're dead. Yeah, the dead is like some like big celestial type dude. Also reminds me of like a giant transformer or something. So, like, you find them dead in space, and they've made like a whole industry out of the parts of everything. Like, you can claim parts of the body.
It's like that superhero comic me and Andrew read by the Noble Causes guy, where the superhero team made a base in one of those type of bodies. And that's where they operated from. And it was a pretty cool base the way they did it.
Yeah, the Avengers have like a base within the body right now, too. A lot of bodies. A lot of heads, a lot of bodies, a lot of alien corpses hanging around, apparently. So this goes through, like, it starts off in 2323, and then pretty quickly it's, like, 2357, and it follows, like, this one group of people where he has, like, a ship. Someday you're going to grow up and inherit the ship type of thing, and then, like, they're like, oh, we're going to... Of course, there's other things that come into play, like, oh, someone's trying to steal a part... Or, like, there's some hidden history between these different guys when they're getting their little pieces. And then they're like, well, do you want something that everyone's going to try to claim? Or do you want this special part of the body? That type of stuff. So I thought it was interesting. I mean, I wouldn't say it was, like, comparing it to, like, the Immortal Hulk. Like, that's pretty much what, like, makes me think, oh, I got to always check out the Ewing stuff, like, after that crazy thing. So I wouldn't say it's that level, but it's definitely entertaining. Like, I'm going to be picking up other stuff here. And then the artwork is, it's weird, because it almost looks like 3D models at times. Because it's all, like, spaceships and crazy stuff, like, space stuff and everything. And it has, like, I don't know, it just reminds me of, like, a digital model, like, poser type of things. Like, everything has a certain sheen to it.
Is that a good thing for you or a bad thing?
I think it stands out. So, like, it's not super distracting. Like, maybe if they were on Earth, I would be like, hey, what's going on here or whatever. But I think it helps that it's super sci-fi. And like a futuristic thing.
Because so. That sounds annoying to me a bit.
I mean, it's not like a picture on a wall. Like, you remember? It's like, oh, everything's drawn normally. And like, then you would insert like a digital picture.
I'm thinking the show Reboot.
Yeah. Like, I can see the connection. But that was like way more, I think, like rough. And like, oh, we're just figuring things out. Like, this looks way more involved, and, like, everything sort of, like, fits together well enough. And it's not just, like, standard panels. Like, things are popping off the page, and things are being shaken up. So, I mean, for this world, I think it's good.
And did you just get the first issue, or are you further in?
I think there's two out so far, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think my issue two just came. But yeah, I don't know how long, like, what their plans are for this. But yeah, I'm definitely getting more issues of this.
I was I had my eye on it, but I was thinking that was more of a trade for me, because I do like a good sci-fi here and there.
All right, that sounds cool. Phil, do you got anything you want to share with the group?
Well. Yeah, I'll just tell you guys a bit about what I was reading. I was so excited to review something for you guys. Have you guys ever read Tom Mason's Dinosaurs for Hire?
I've heard, I remember, I think there was ads in Wizard Magazine.
That was for the Malibu series in 1993, okay. The second volume.
Yeah.
But I started, as a kid, when these came out originally, I loved them when I was a little youngster or whatever. But now, I couldn't do it, though. I couldn't get through them because they're just so bad.
What? Wow.
And I also wanted to cover X-Mutants for you guys, because have you guys ever read X-Mutants?
Like X-Mutants or EX-Mutants?
Yeah, the X-Mutants.
Yes, I have. I don't think I lasted long. There's a... one of the early artists is a pretty famous guy, right?
I don't know. I have a bunch of them, but I've never read them. So I was going to, but I've always wanted to, but I don't know. All I know about it is from what I know from the Sega Genesis game. But I've never actually read one issue.
That's crazy. Like, you think of certain properties, like they got toys, video games, and everything in the 90s.
Dinosaurs for Hire had a video game, too, from Sega Genesis.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was...
But, I mean, I like dinosaurs.
It was Ron Lim. He was the artist on... At least...
Oh, Ron Lim. Okay. I love Ron Lim. He was my favorite Marvel one in the 90s and that because of Silver Surfer and that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is, you know, obviously from the 80s, so before any of that stuff. But, yeah. I have... I read a bunch of them, but I don't know that I followed it strictly and figured out where they ended up to. Because I don't think I ever read the stuff when it went to Malibu.
But, okay, yeah. This was a new set of heroes, I believe, the Malibu ones.
How does that work? Like dinosaurs are in the world, they're like, hey, hire up a dinosaur.
Oh, I was talking about X-Mutants, not
dinosaurs. X-Mutants. And I've also been reading a crap load of Image, like from in the beginning, maybe the first 3 years, like everything.
What?
Except for Spawn and Savage Dragon, because I've read Savage Dragon so many times, and Spawn I don't care about as much.
Well, but Phil, I've been reading I have some Image comics we can discuss.
Oh, really?
Maybe. Yeah.
I wonder if it's the ones I've read.
I was going to give you guys a choice.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh,
wow. I once considered buying a run of Freak Force, but I didn't know.
Oh, I love Freak Force. But yeah, and one other thing I read was Dark Horse's two-issue miniseries of Dr. Giggles. That was a horror movie that I've always avoided just because it looked stupid to me. And the comic was so bad because it's everything he says is like a doctor pun, like an apple a day keeps the doctor away, like shit like that. Like it's so bad. But then I noticed in the ad that the movie was made by Dark Horse Comics.
Really?
So I didn't realize they like had their hands in so much production stuff. So I looked it up a bit, and there's some really interesting stuff like Dark Matter. Did you guys ever see that sci-fi show?
No. I know the title, but no.
Yeah, really good. I had no clue that they did that. What were some more interesting ones? Tons of movies, though. Oh, Splinter, which was like a weird horror movie. Like they've done a ton of TV shows and movies. I didn't realize they had such a big like production company for movies and stuff.
I think that's why some things went to Dark Horse, right? Because they'd be like, oh, let us option your stuff and pass it through Hollywood.
Yeah, because Dr. Giggles, is one of those things where it wasn't based on a comic, but they did it. But yeah, the comic was garbage, though. And now I definitely don't want to see the movie ever. But yeah, what's the Image ones you got there, Andrew?
Well, you guys have a choice. I have a mini comic. I have a Image non-comic and an Image tie-in with DC Comics.
Oh, okay. So say that again. These are all Image comics?
No, they are not. Okay. I have a mini comic.
Sorry, I'm stoned.
Is the first one. Mini comic. The second one
very cute.
Is
love mini comics.
Image comic mixed with DC.
Okay.
And the third one is an Image, not really a comic, but it's an Image comic.
Andrew, you had me at the second time you said DC.
No, I got to go with mini comic.
Okay.
What? No.
All right. The mini comic is from Will Quinn, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Now, the mini comic is still, it's one of those where it's a web comic and they collect it into a comic. You guys have seen that before, right?
Yeah.
So it's like half the, you know, like they fold it over. So it's kind of basically like a stapled together. So each page is like a half size. So when you read it on
That's how I made comics as a kid.
Yeah. And so on the computer, it's actually bigger. And those of you that follow my Twitter account, I retweet Will Quinn like every other day. He draws all these little bunny drawings about them doing different exciting adventures. Okay. So this is not about them. This is Asteroid 8082. And the print only has the first two chapters. The webcomic goes up to chapter 5, but he's taking a break. That came out in like end of 2018, beginning of 2019. So I don't know. He says he might pick it up. But you know, with these webcomics, maybe they get picked up and maybe they don't. But the conceit of it is basically, it's kind of a, he calls it, I think, a slice of life on an asteroid. Hmm. But the main character we meet is like a super smart young girl, and she gets an internship on a colony that lives on this tiny asteroid. Sort of think the Little Prince. Like, the whole asteroid is maybe 20 kilometers, and you can walk the whole thing. So they have a lot of funny stuff about night and day and things like that, because obviously, you know, it might be night on one end, and you could just walk into the daylight type of thing. And she meets two kids who live on the asteroid, a boy and a girl. And basically, the smart girl is kind of our entry into this world, and it's the fish out of water thing. Basically, like, big city girl goes to the small country. But in this case, the small country is its own asteroid. So they have those moments where they grow up in a different culture. Like, they don't have the seasons or the sky or, you know, they have the little atmosphere, but they don't have the same traditions and things that we have on Earth. So she has those interactions where they're always like, wait, what's that? Like, how does that work? We don't do it that way. And then the one
they
girl...
have asteroid day?
Yeah. Well, they don't have seasons, obviously, and they don't do much cooking. And it's real small, so everybody kind of knows each other. And the one girl from the asteroid has a bit of a chip on her shoulder, and the other boy is kind of a good-natured, heavy-set young lad. One might see a young Andy in such an innocent young person. But yeah, so it's just that kind of... She shows up and they kind of introduce themselves and have kind of adventures where they explore the atmosphere. But part of it is just, do you like Will Quinn? And like I said, check out my Twitter feed. I retweet millions of his stuff. This is a black and white book. And I really like, because the asteroid has not a non-traditional atmosphere, it's always black with like little dots of light everywhere. And I think it really looked, as you guys know, I love when they reverse like black and white values on the page so that it's mostly black and then white and then white and then black. And this comic does it a lot. And I like the kind of slow, easy pacing of these characters and the foibles of the different asteroid culture versus Earth culture. And the young boy is kind of obsessed with Earth a little bit. So he asks questions about, you know, what's the sky look like and all this stuff. And yeah, so... It kind of, there are no big adventures or explosions or laser blasts or anything. Like they do chapters 3 through 5 online, they go to this little satellite to try and restore some internet connection so the kid can watch a baseball game from Earth. Yeah, just that kind of simple. And like I said, I like Will Quinn's style. Very, this is where I always fall down. Like it's strangely... For me, a great amount of detail. So in that mix between sort of a simple, not a lot of lines going on, like there's not a lot of busy, fussy detail in it, but it's not super simplistic either. And a lot of the backgrounds have a lot of not if it's not just black, it's going to be like a lot of interesting textures, like when they're in the different buildings on the asteroid. And I really think that sets off against the characters, because the characters are pretty simple face designs. So for some reason, like those kind of busy pattern backgrounds against the simple characters, I really like how the characters kind of contrast with that, and it's visually pleasing to me. But like I said, Asteroid 8082, I don't know. He said he's going to keep the link up for a while, so I'll put it in the notes, but I don't know if it'll be there forever. But, you know, free comics.
Can you do the DC one too?
I mean, I paid for this one, so it's print, but that was a free. Well, it depends. Yeah. I'll let Kevin go, and then I'll have the okay. DC one on tap.
I have another short one. Probably because of the story. It's weird. I finally got my October Yana, Devil Woman.
Oh, nice. The one Steve's talked about so much.
Yeah. That he allegedly says he covered on the show, maybe? The legend of him covering it on the show?
Yeah, I don't remember him ever talking about that.
Maybe they got swept into the discard pile. Either that or maybe that was one of those episodes Kevin edited.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's weird because I remember ordering it from the previews and it was like 1976 mystery or like it had some other subtitle and I was like, this is not what I know of it as.
And this is the Jim Rugg Blacklight one or not Blacklight?
Yeah. And then it has Ad House Books. And then beside that, it has his little seal of Outlaw Comics. Because from their cartoonist Kayfabe YouTube channel, like one of the subcategories is like Outlaw Comics. And then, you know, they have some of the most notorious comics in that category of usually, I think, harder to find weird stuff. So this is generally in that direction. And I mean, the back cover is like a whole other story, like in itself. I think you can also get this like as a process magazine or PDF type of thing that's like 300 pages or something. Like apparently there's a lot of research and process if you're really want to get into this thing. But this was just $10, this one. I'm not sure how many pages. It's probably like 24 pages or something.
I feel like him and his partner are so good. They're not just good at comics. They're great at explaining comics and also marketing. Like they really have a... They're those type of guys that know how to hustle and sell and everything, and I think that's cool that they don't just make these comics, but they're out there moving product.
And it's crazy, like the back cover has so much info. There's probably as much, if not more, info on this back cover than in half of this comic, because it goes into the story, but at some point, like I don't mean this in a bad way, but we've all read those 24, or maybe not all of us, maybe not Phil, but there's a certain effect when you're doing a 24-hour comic, like the guy starts out with like, 20 panels a page or whatever
I've read plenty of 24-hour comics.
Okay.
Very much. That Grizzly Bear one, the Eric Larson one, maybe another one.
Wait, well, did Axe Cop start as 24-hour
comic? I don't know. That was a web comic, I'm pretty sure, first.
Yeah.
But I know there's other ones, but usually it was something that was reprinted, though, if I've read it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know how they start out really ambitious, and then, like, hours goes by, and then they're like, I'm behind the clock, I gotta get this out, and then, it progressively becomes like splash pages or less and less panels. Like there's that sort of effect going on in here too. But it's also as the action is ramping up and as he's trying out different things. So like I don't really hold that against him. and you get a, like a whole like, I'm sure you would put on your 3D glasses and one of these pages would be in 3D. So while it does become like that, it's totally fine, I think. Because the visuals are just crazy, and it is a crazy story of a lot of people getting killed, and like the USSR, and it's like, oh, we got this plan, and all this stuff, and then someone coming in and kicking ass, pretty much. It's not a super, super deep story kind of thing. But it's funny that you open it up, and right away, it makes me think of, you know, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Steranko gun in the holster type of thing. But it's a topless woman holding a gun, and all she's wearing on is like this gun and a holster thing with lots of ammo. so hilarious. And the colors, like the colors, absolutely wild. I don't know about the black light. If I'll buy a black light, where I'm going to get a black light? Like, you know what I mean?
They like don't have Spencer's Gifts up there. Go down to have yourself a rendezvous Rito and head up to Spencer's Gifts at the mall. Phil, they still got the big mall down there with Spencer's Gift?
I've never heard of a Spencer's Gift.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm probably... seen one, but I'm not entirely sure.
Do they still have the mall down there on the canal, Phil?
Yes, we do have a mall.
Or I'll just bring this comic center in there. Like,
yes, but it's full of COVID. We can't go there anymore.
Yeah. I'll just say, hey, can I try out this black light? And then I'll bring out this illicit Outlaw comic, and they'll be like, whoa, wait a second here, son. it would be interesting, though. So definitely worth my while. Very interesting indie comic type of thing. I guess I could have picked this up in a normal year, like at a con or something, but obviously that wasn't going to happen.
No.
Okay, Andrew, what's your
I can't take it anymore, Andrew. You gotta tell me what it is.
Okay, the year is 1994.
Okay.
Image, you know, hottest book, hottest company on the shelf.
Hell yeah.
DC decides to stick it to Crosstown Marvel by teaming up two of the biggest characters of all time. Batman and Spawn, War Devil.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Are you guys familiar with this?
No. Absolutely. I have any DC Image crossover, I definitely have.
So, yeah, there was something, like it's an in-continuity consequences for a Spawn type of thing, this whole crossover deal.
So did you read the Image one or the DC one? Because they each produce their own, right?
I have the DC one. An old friend of mine. The only one I'm still in contact with from when I was growing up, he lives on the other side of the country, and sometimes we send each other stuff. And he was kind enough to send me a surprise box, and it had this and a couple of Warlord annuals and some other fun stuff. Oh, cool. So I was like, whoa, Batman and Spawn, I'll read this. We were talking about all the fun, weird Batman crossovers, and I think I'd mentioned I never read this one, so he sent it to me. But it's Doug Munch, Chuck Dixon, Alan Grant. Three writers. Not sure.
That's a lot of writers.
Not sure it took three. Klaus Janson for fun. And I like, he's the artist and colorist. They have Steve Buccolato as the computer colorist. And Todd Klein gets a workout as the letterist. And so this is 1994, so Spawn is still having memory issues. Phil, this probably would have been what? Sometime we're still waiting for Spawn issue 3, say, to
come out. No.
Wow.
I kid. Clearly, Image never had a problem shipping books on time. They come out like clockwork.
Hey, I got a lot of those first Images, but I have everything now, but I got it like in dollar bins, so I got it all at once, so I'm happy.
Wow.
Well, I got this one for free. I didn't have to. So this is very, like, Klaus Janson's really 90s-ing it up. It's a lot going on, but the simple plot, the spoiler is, there's this ancient evil. And so it goes back in history. And if you guys know, the Roanoke Island was one of the first settlements in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And then a ship goes away. You know, they get resupplies. When they come back, like, the settlement's gone. And there's just a word, Croatoan, carved on the tree. Yeah. And basically modern scholarship thinks they just, whatever was left, just joined the natives, so to speak.
Yeah.
The thing. Mm-hmm. But that's not what really happened, as I learned in this comic. What really happened, we find out, is it's a devilish plot from a demon from hell. But it's laid out as a mystery. So it starts with Matches Malone, a.k.a. Batman, one of his undercover identity, looking for information on the mom.
I hate Matches Malone so much. I don't know. I just hate when he goes in that identity. Same for, like, I know I'm not in the popular opinion for this, but I also hate, like, when Wolverine goes to Japan.
Match.
Yeah, no, I'm not thinking of that either.
Like, I like when it goes to Japan, but I would probably say the Madripoor is even a better fit.
Well, this one, so Batman's trying to get down to what's going on with the mob in Gotham City. And what's interesting is Spawn, what did he get? I assume he gets his memory back at some point, right, Phil?
Yeah, definitely. I can't tell you when exactly, but yeah.
So in this one, he's still having memory problems and kind of haunted by it. And he's very, very emo. Like, more emo than Sandman. About, like, why can't I remember? What's, oh, woe is me? And really, like, very, very emo. But he's here in Gotham because when he was back Colonel Al Simmons, he was a contract killer and killed this guy, Simon Vesper, who was working with the mob. It turns out Simon Vesper appears to still be alive. Bum, bum, bum. And in the course of the investigation, early on, Spawn and Batman run into each other. Spawn mistakes Batman for a demon from hell. Makes him seem pretty stupid, if you want. Like, he's a dude in a bat outfit.
Yeah.
Like you do.
But Spawn's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And because it's a DC image book, the fight only lasts 3 pages or so, unlike a Marvel one. But it's also a lot of big, crazy, overpowered, and, you know, Spawn's going, you're not going to take my soul. And Batman's like, what are you talking about, you crazy person? And then they introduce themselves. And what's weird is that only because of Spawn's memory, I like how he remembers going to Gotham to shoot the guy, but doesn't remember, like, Batman is in, like, kind of the most, I would argue, maybe one of the most famous things about Gotham City is Batman, but what do I know? It seems like it would be, you know, if you're only going to remember certain things, you might want to remember, but they need to have him have a little fight.
Like, I would say Joker is more famous than Batman, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say you definitely remember a clown killing a lot of people.
So you're not going to have one of these team-ups without the two of them throwing down fists. But they decide to team up, and when Spawn introduced himself, he didn't introduce himself as Al, not as Spawn, which I thought was going to be a great moment. But basically, Simon Vesper, who they think was killed, but they just have it as he was disappeared, and here he shows up. Spoiler, he was actually killed by Al Simmons back before he was Spawn.
Do you guys, quick question, just to see if you guys remember your history. Do you guys remember who originally killed Al Simmons?
Wasn't it his best friend or something?
Tony Twist?
No, Chapel from Youngblood.
Oh, that's right.
But I think that eventually got written out after Youngblood left.
Yeah, a lot of that.
So they're trying to get to the mystery of Simon Vesper and what's going on, and Batman's tracking, like, all the property deals and all that. Well, it turns out Simon Vesper is dead, and the shell is being inhabited by a demon named Croatoan. So the thing was, he signed his work, and he's trying to organize a giant, you know, mass sacrifice to open the gates of hell. like I said, very kind of Sandman light. And so after Batman gets kind of beaten up by the Simon Vesper before he reveals his demon form, he then reveals his demon form and Spawn shows up. Yay! And you know, Spawn fights the demon. But it's not... He fights the demon and... Look, I don't make comics. But like in the 4-page sequence, it's a lot of words. I mean, a lot of words.
What's wrong with words?
That's because there's 3 writers, Andrew. They each have to get paid.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to see them fight. And instead, it's like 3 pages of just them shooting beams out of their hands and kind of posing again. You know, there's not really any much of a back and forth. It's just the two of them firing whatever demon blasts at each other without much, while the demon explains everything, like who he is and how he arranged to have Al Simmons hired to kill Simon Vesper and how all these souls are going to come into the gates of hell and he set this up. You know, like the whole plot is laid out for those of us that didn't figure it out. But eventually he hits him with one of the rays that makes Spawn drop to his knees and go, oh, the pain. And that's when Batman shows up and throws some percussion caps, which I would think it would be more like a concussion, but I guess it's percussion, like a drummer. Boop, boop, boop. And that's all the break Spawn needed to put the double whammy. Essence of monster, too drained to chase it. Don't know if I could catch it anyways. Don't know what I'd do with it if I could. And there's a sound like the cries of tortured babies, and the gateway to hell slams closed. Thank you. That was my emo poetry from when I was 16. And, no, that's...
Also, you might have a career in narrating books.
That's, yeah, I mean, it's fun, but it's kind of silly. Like, it's hard to believe when you're out of the 90s and you jump back in, it's hard to believe how...
What?
Serious this stuff is, considering how goofy it is. Like, they were very serious about their goofiness.
Yeah. I like 90s stuff a lot still.
I'm enjoying it, reading it here. But, yeah, and then the Batman and, you know, Spawn have a fun little end. You know the darkness, Batman. What is it that makes one man good, the next man evil? That's beyond me. But somebody once said, good and evil are not determined by the intercourse of people with another, but entirely by a man's relationship with himself. Now, if you'll excuse me.
It's like you're a professional.
There's a city that needs me. Yeah, so Spawn, I guess, is still grappling with his
next
identity.
Next episode is a special of you acting out a whole comic book.
I have tapes of that. I literally did this with voices before.
So, Spawn, I have no one, like I said, because this was free, I don't know if this is like $1 million comic book or...
I don't think so.
Fodder, no.
I'm pretty sure you'd find that probably in the dollar bins and stuff. I think I remember the Image one being better.
This was fun. Like, it's a cool, look, it's always, they're always going to be
hand-picked. Oh, yeah, it was a blast, yeah.
I mean, they got to give both these losers time on the pay. You know what I mean? Like, neither company is going to be like, we can't make Batman look like an asshole. And Image is going to be like, well, Spawn's got to be a badass and have a gravelly voice and talk about how hard life is.
Do you guys have a favorite crossover, like an indie property with another property? Like, do you guys have a favorite crossover?
Black Hammer and Sandman the Endless.
Oh, they crossed over?
Oh, wait, no, that was just the Black Hammer Endless characters that look exactly the same.
Oh.
I was going to say, historically for me, it was that Badger Coyote, because that was the first crossover, I think, between Marvel and an indie, and it was just felt so transgressive, like they were really breaking ground, and oh my gosh, what'll happen next? What characters will mix with what? And it seemed like the promise of an age were going to be fulfilled. And for laughs, I always loved, and I think they warned on the cover, in preteen Dirty Jean Kung Fu Kangaroos #1, there's like a one panel appearance by one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or all of them. Or one. But I like the crass, like, hey, there's an appearance by...
Speaking of crossovers, Kevin, I recently found all my Deathmates.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I was tempted to read them after your horrible reviews of them.
Well,
yeah.
You got to get him caught up so the two of you can cover the next one.
Yeah, I think the only ones I'm missing are green and red.
Yeah, because there was that weird previews edition.
That's the green one, I think.
And yeah, then, I didn't have those.
And then red is the Youngblood and Bloodshot one.
Yeah.
I don't have that one either.
We got to get you guys red so you can cover it.
Yeah, but I feel like I have the ones I would want the most because it has like the Wildstorm characters and stuff.
Yeah, I think the Image ones were the crazy ones. Like, people can get upset about how crappy Valiant is or whatever, but it's like the Valiant ones are the ones that actually have, like, well, maybe you don't want this, like, this thing is so crazy to begin with, maybe you don't want it to be coherent. But the Valiant ones are more coherent.
All right, who's next? Because I have my last Image non-comic, but I want someone else to go first.
You want me to do another one?
You might as well, because, yeah, I'm...
All right, has anyone played Cyberpunk 2077 Trauma Team?
Is that like an app?
No, I think, is it a PlayStation or Xbox game? One of those two.
It's not out yet, Cyberpunk.
It's not out yet? Really?
Nope.
The comic came out before the game?
Well, it kept being pushed back.
Yeah, there's some famous one that keeps getting delayed.
Yeah, really? It's the ones by the people who did Witcher.
Huh.
But I spend most of my time on Animal Crossing, so.
Well, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure it's not for the Switch, so it has to be one of the other two.
No, Animal Crossing is on the Switch, Kevin.
Yeah, the Animal Crossing part, I'm aware of that one. Even
I don't know. Maybe you haven't heard of it. I've never
played Animal Crossing.
I mean, maybe it didn't get up to Canada, but it's a pretty big, good selling game, Kevin. So
there's several major franchises that people play, and I've never played a game of.
Well, I like Animal Crossing, but I get it. You got to be a rebel. You got to be indie, not play the popular games.
I got to play the popular indie games. I got to play, what is it, like Celeste and Axiom Verge and what's some other?
Tetris.
The cat one where the cat gets in a mechanized suit, like the cat is Samus from Metroid.
Of course.
What about the Goose game? Is that independent?
Oh, yeah, it's probably independent, right?
I don't know. I've never played that one. I've also neither never played I. Fortnite, so.
I never played Fortnite either.
Thank the gods.
I never played Fire Emblem, never played Pokemon. What other? This must be some other major thing I've never played.
Pac-Man?
I played Pac-Man. There's not much of Pac-Man.
I'm surprised you haven't played Pokemon. I figured that'd be like a staple for someone like you.
No, it's weird because some of these things, like if you were into Magic the Gathering and then some of these things came later, it's like you were into the things before that were, I wouldn't say more adult, but, well, they had the satanic imagery that the parents got crazy over.
I have to pretend I like Pokemon for my daughter and it kills me inside.
So wait, do you play like a video or a card game or the...
Well, she has the like Game Boy games.
Okay, because isn't there also like a cartoon and card games too?
She doesn't. Yeah, she doesn't do any of that, thankfully.
Okay, well, you can get her into. It's a gateway comic, Phil. Starts reading Pokemon. Oh, next thing you know,
no, she reads all kinds of comics. She has a pretty big collection now on her own.
Yeah, but it's all that stuff that Kevin hates, like Dogman.
No,
Raina Telgemeier and all
she
that.
She has her own floppies, like some of the Marvel kid comics there. You know, the Tiny Titans, stuff like that. So she's getting more into the, like, superheroes.
Good. I don't know if Kevin hates those, too.
You might hate those. If I don't hate something, you might hate it.
All right, so Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yes,
Is this a prequel?
I really don't know.
Is John Wick in it?
I did a cursory, like, looking up to see, like, you know, oh, like, this must be a game, blah, blah, blah. I wonder what the universe is. Yeah, looks like it's the same as the comic type of thing. It's I guess I would describe the future world as sort of like where Valiant was going with their corporate wars, and where like Marvel's 29-9 has a lot of corporations, where this is like some kind of like medical corporation thing, but the medical people are also seem like very military too. And of the trauma, like, obviously, people are getting shot in the head or whatever, and then, like, a team of guys comes in and, you know, we can save you or whatever, and then they get killed. Like a lot of killing, but I imagine, like in the game, first person, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. So, yeah, surprisingly to me, I guess it's not surprising that Cullen Bunn like writes 25,000 books. That's not the surprising part. And usually a lot of horror related books, right? I think we can all agree on that.
I'd say he's a big horror fan for sure.
Yeah. And then the art's by Miguel Valderrama. And it has one of those, this is from Dark Horse Comics, and it has one of those silly, our comeback will be bigger than our setback stickers on the cover here.
I hope so.
I don't. Did anyone run the numbers yet to see if June was bigger or July or? Well,
you keep promising me this big comeback in the previews, and I keep reading the previews, and I'm just not seeing much still.
It's there.
It's not there. I've looked, and there's just nothing.
Maybe your tastes have just changed.
And even DC's about to knock me out because of these Future State books or whatever. I have no interest in those, so I'm going to be not going to be reading DC anymore, probably.
How can we be the same? I can't believe we're the same.
Agreed. Two other times. I believe once was Marvel Tales, and I don't remember the other.
Yeah, it's a rare convergence. Yeah, I'm surprised that people were so excited. I mean, it like I hear DC 1 million was good, but I don't know about this. It's just, I shouldn't get into it. I'm not going to get into it.
No. Talk about your comic. I don't remember why we brought that up.
I don't know. This is not. I mean, this is a sort of a future state comic in itself. So yeah, this follows a team as they go to rescue someone in your, like, I guess your Blade Runners, your 29-9 type of city, and just about everyone gets killed on this trauma team mission. So then, the guy that survives, they're sort of like giving him a questionnaire to see if they're like ready to go back on get back to work. So they ask him all these questions about what happened. How does this make you feel? I mean, I guess on some level, it reminds me of Dread and like going into some crazy apartment building where someone's out to get all the judges or something. Like, I guess I can sort of thread like a connective tissue on top of some of those things into this too. And there's also some like guy, maybe this is the villain of the game, I really don't know, but there's like this one guy out there that's particularly he laughs a lot, so I immediately think of the Joker.
If he has a twirly mustache, he's probably evil.
I mean, he has all these, it looks like so I'm not sure if that's blood, maybe, or tattoos, but he has sort of like a white skin, like real pale, and he also has like a hoodie, and he's like hopping on to their like flying motorized vehicle, and these like long extendable blade things that he runs right through, I guess, right through the face, right through the your protective gear, right into your head, and he, like, massacres all these dudes. And that's basically the big shock, because then they go on another mission, and it's like, oh, we gotta go to this apartment building, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, the big thing at the end of the issue is, it's like, oh, it's that dude called them. So, they like, they risk their lives to, like, get, like, hey, someone needs our help. So they risk their lives to, like, get there, and then it's like, oh, no, it's that dude. So I'm like, is there something else going on, or is he just, like, gonna straight up kill them, right? But he looks, he has problems too, I imagine. So it I don't know, like, I probably wouldn't play this game anyways. It's just not on a thing I have, but it seems interesting enough. I think the whole back and forth, like, they have a lot of, like, the whole him dealing with the whole trauma of, like, being a medic and all that. Like, if it was just straight through, I don't think I would find it as interesting, but they go through the, like, interviewing him, how do you feel about everything that's, like, going on? And it's also, I think, like, the artwork is a little gritty. And the coloring is just, I guess I would describe it as maybe, like, pastels and a lot of bright colors. You know, because it's the future, and it's that type of thing with, like, advertising and signs everywhere, there's just, like, hundreds of colors. There's a lot to look at. Mm-hmm. Keeps things interesting. So definitely worth my while to check it out. I might get the other ones.
I thought you said you hated it.
I don't think I hate it.
Oh.
Well, video game tie-ins are always a mixed bag. Sometimes they're great, and sometimes they're just...
Mega Man.
Fulfilling.
Mega Man was so good. The Archie series?
So oh, that one was better, yeah.
That one was so good. I can't... That one still should be going, like the Sonic.
Oh, no.
I noticed some of the video game tie-in comics have been... Certain ones, like, go up, like, quite a bit. Like, I don't know if people are playing the games and then they're out and then they didn't print a lot of the comic. Like, I don't really know. So, I don't know. Maybe this spoils the game. Like, if the game's not out yet.
No,
like,
they're usually pretty good about... I don't think I've seen too many tie-ins. They're usually prequels or setups or whatever, because they're meant to get you to buy the game.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they're just backstory or whatever, but all the ones I've seen, it's like, oh, you know, buy this awesome game.
Well, I imagine this game, you just go out on missions and do the stuff, like the same thing as the game, but then they added this other level here, because it's a comic. Like, you can just go straight through it, but that would be boring. It's a comic, so, yeah, Cullen Bunn brings another level to everything. He's quality dude.
All right. Well, should I throw this last one in, or should we save it for next time?
You might as well throw it in.
All right, I have a problem, boys. I'm going to admit it. I buy stuff on eBay.
Like graded comics and stuff?
No, mostly
like toys?
No. Toys and like reader copies and stuff.
I know how you feel. I bought two empty boxes of Nintendo games. Just like I paid, I think I spent like $80 or $100 when I was done to get two empty boxes of old Nintendo games.
Wow.
And my problem is, like, these sellers, they know, okay, the worst thing when you're buying just random copies is the shipping. So a lot of the bulk sellers know, like, oh, if you buy X number of books, the shipping's the same or whatever. So I'm always, like, filling orders. I'm spending more money because I feel like, oh, I don't want to pay $5 for one comic. So I'd rather pay, you know, $8 for four comics that I don't care about. I've been filling some loads. So sometimes I just pick like, oh, this is a book for 50 cents or a dollar. So I picked up one that, an Homage Studios book from 1993.
Yeah.
Involving almost the entire crew. A lot of the big Image names, not Todd McFarlane, not Eric Larson.
Not Campbell.
No. Wasn't that a Jim Lee print?
Yeah, this is Jim Lee, Mark Silvestri. Brandon Choi, Wills Portacio, Scott Williams, Brett Booth, a lot of people. Some great
stuff, if I remember.
Yeah, all of them worked on this book. Phil, if you remember 1993, can you guess what non-comic book homage studios put out in 1993 that would have a lot of different artists?
Non-comic book. Because you say it that way, it really confuses me, and I go blank.
Yeah. It's the homage.
Like it's a swimsuit issue or
it's
something?
It's the Homage Studios swimsuit special.
Okay.
And
those are so tacky. You got that?
At 50 cents, I feel like I really should have gotten my favorite. There's actually one cool thing. In the back, J. Scott Campbell does caricatures of everyone. It's a group shot.
Wow.
There's like 18, like Jim Lee and Brandon Choi and Wills. He didn't put himself in it, but he put a lot of the other, Scott Clark, a lot of these other people that work for the company. And so that's the coolest part. But yeah, it's like not a comic book. Like, I didn't know that.
No.
Like, it really
is. I have the image one.
Like, crappy pinups of, like, all the different characters done in, like, and you're in like, this.
Bikinis.
Yeah, and it's 1993, so the art's okay. But it's just a lot of people are in it, too. Like, other than those people, I was surprised. There's an Adam Hughes in here, a Brian Stalfries, Joe Phillips. And the one I love is, okay, so Jim Lee has this double-page spread. The best part of it is the background. Like, he spread this really detailed, like, rocks and ocean and like a lizard and a, like super like spent a lot of time and energy on that. Like, it's way better than the figure work. And the other great
thing
is
not like the Marvel ones where they like had the Punisher like he was wearing only a shell or something weird.
There's all that in here. It's mostly the lady characters, but there are some of the men. But no, I was just saying in Jim's particular one, I feel like the most work he spent. And who knows, I felt like it was the background got more attention than the figure work.
I feel like this is going to become an obsession with you, where you're going to just collect all the swimsuit issues from all the companies.
But I think I probably had the Marvel one if it came out in the 80s, but this is
I've never knew a Marvel one came out.
Oh, the Marvel ones are infamous.
But yeah, it's just real. They're all in, like, you know, string bikinis and showing a lot or have strategic thing. It's just, I didn't think it was, I was like, oh, it's like, I had forgotten this was a thing. So I'm like, oh, it's still a thing. Book.
No, it's
like,
still a thing. They still,
yeah, I think Street Fighter does them.
Yeah. There's a few different companies that do them still,
but it's just, my problem is 1993 is not the period of art that I find the best for my, you know, it doesn't drive for me.
Yeah.
And then it's mostly, the other thing that's funny is the ads are pretty much just like the you know, except they're not women in bikinis, but they have a bunch of ads in here that feel very similar. But a big ad for Deathmate, the biggest crossover event in the history of comics.
Darn tootin'.
And Pitt guest stars in Cyberforce.
Oh, yeah.
Pitt guest stars in everyone's book.
I've read that recently.
So, yeah, just a lot of goofy silliness that I was filling an eBay order, and I'm like, oh, Image, I need to read. It's not a comic book. How can you sell that? It's just little goofy. What they say is the artist is the one that designed the swimsuit, quote unquote. So that's how they get the artist name in. And some of it's better, but it's really at the height of, like, 90s with the really crazy legs and a lot of the other things. And even the Adam Hughes isn't peak Adam Hughes. I mean, so if you see those, yes, it really is just full page spreads of the characters in bikinis. There's nothing except for the caricatures of the creatives, which is cool. Like, there's nothing else to the book.
So when is peak Adam Hughes?
I would say maybe, or I think I remember around after the 2000s, those early aughts, I felt like he did a bunch of covers for, the Fables spinoff Ferrest and some interiors too. That wasn't that like early aughts, something like that.
I think I think so.
I thought that stuff was really good. I think there
are some Catwoman covers eventually, too, that get a lot of attention.
I think, because he did, I think the big deal was there, he did sequentials, too. And I thought it was good stuff, but.
Mm.
Hey, man. So, if I was going to see any of you guys, I would give you that book.
And I'll give you the Image one.
Because it's not a comic book, but.
No.
Anyways.
It's anyone... the shape of a comic.
Yes.
Well, at least you tried to get an image, old Image comic, I guess.
Anyway, the price point, you couldn't be beat.
I was very disappointed.
Right, I got one more.
Okay. But you got to be quick on this one, Kevin.
Okay. Colonel Weird Cosmagogue.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it.
Do you know who this is by, Andrew?
I do not.
It's by,
really?
It's by Jeff Lemire and Tyler Crook.
You've only heard him talk about Black Hammer for how many years now?
Oh, I didn't know it was a Black Hammer. Look, I can't, this stuff, in fact, I think my internet's going out. So if it doesn't make it, I might have to.
Oh, no, you can't use that as an excuse.
Having some trouble here, boys. You must be going through a tunnel. I can't.
Yeah, because remember Super Steve was all like, those Black Hammer books aren't coming out anymore. Well two series are I think, currently going.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I think it's a successful thing. Like, they should keep.
Yeah.
It keeps the lights on, you know? Good on them. Good. It's Dark Horse, right? They need
Dark Horse.
And they're fun stories. Like, I definitely recommend them if anyone needs something to read in these times.
Yeah, I think some of my excitement is coming back, but I don't think it's ever at that level of the main series when you were trying to figure out the mystery and all that cool stuff is going on.
See, I'd rather, if I had to give up the main series or the miniseries, I'd rather keep the miniseries.
Yeah, I just like to goof on it as like a thing. And also because we just ended up talking about it way too. Like, I don't like it if we're every week on the. But it's been, you know, like.
Yeah.
I don't have a beef with it. I just don't want the show to fall into the trap of every week we talk about the same book or whatever. We had to take a break from. Luckily, Tom hasn't put anything out recently because he's another one we get into a loop with. But I'm glad Black Hammer should be out there.
Well, they put that Kirby book out.
Yeah, well, I haven't.
Where he's talking as Kirby?
Yeah, I haven't gotten that yet.
You'll get around to it, I imagine.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But Black Hammer lives.
Indeed. So, yeah, and I think this is pretty suitable for a miniseries because Colonel Weird was always popping in and out of time, saying crazy things, and then people saying, weirdo, and then he disappears incoherently drunk, rambling about whatever the time-space anomaly. Like it was one of those, like, I guess he's like an Adam Strange, you know, one of those, like, old space hero type of guys.
Yeah, he's totally an Adam Strange.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what you get here. Like, he appears at some place, and then he's either disappearing to somewhere else or, like, flashbacking, remembering something. And then he's like, I got to do something. And then, of course, he can't remember what he's supposed to do. But he knows where the cool beverages are or whatever when he shows up in some weird town. Like it's so bizarre but or weird. And then, you know, it's filling in some of his past, like, how he got to where he was. And I thought Tyler Crook did some of the Six Gun fill-ins or miniseries. And this looks way more painterly. And, like, it looks really nice. Like, I don't know why this looks so much different. But it's, like, it's real. It looks like you could, like, touch the comic and, like, feel the texture. It's like you could put your hands right into it. It's just very nice. It's
creepy, Kevin.
Very nice.
So you get to see his rendition of like Anti-God, who in one of these panels looks totally like like the Black Flash, or because he shows like there's another panel where he doesn't look like that, but depending upon the vision, like some of these characters might look different. So it's just interesting to get back into that world and see how he got to where he was. Like sometimes he's a space hippie, it looks like, and then other times he's going into like a Ditko-esque other world where like giant eyeballs are staring at him and like the periodic table showing up.
Is this still on? Like, do you have the first few issues or just the first one, or
just the first one so far?
Yeah. I think it just was it this week it came out. It's very recent, anyways.
Editor's note, it will not be this week by the time we get to posting this episode.
Oh, yes. It was 3 weeks ago.
I like how I dropped that in there, right? Just so everything will sync up just fine.
Well, I'm glad, like I said, all goofing aside, I'm glad that I don't want, you know, like if people are enjoying it, it's a good book. We need indie books now more than ever. Like, it's a hard time for the industry.
At this point, probably one of the biggest franchises at Dark Horse Comics.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I hope they get a lot of use out of it. But I think we've put together a pretty good episode, gentlemen. There'll be some editing challenges, but the listener at home can play Spot Where the Internet Dropped Out. But any wrap-up thoughts, gentlemen, or catchphrases?
In 2020, read even more indie comics, especially now.
All right, guys.
Stay safe, too.
Boy, Kevin will have to update that to 2021 pretty soon.
Yeah.
Although maybe I should get him to say 2021, and then I can edit that in, and then I'll save that if this episode is extremely late.
You can use a robot voice. Can't you get some, like, digital assistant or something to say, in 2020... read even more, or whatever voice they use. No, isn't it usually a woman's voice?
I don't know. And I need
like
it
the
for
Star Trek computer.
And I need it for 2021. But hopefully everyone's having a safe time. Just be careful, man. Nothing's gone away. And thanks for spending some time with us.
Downtown, where all the action is. I can't get that song out of my head. Downtown Rito, this is it. Theaters, galleries, shows, pubs, restaurants, and tons of shopping. Come downtown and get a piece of the action.
One block east of Parliament Hill, Downtown Rito has a rich assortment of some 500 establishments and is close to many landmarks and attractions, including the Rito Canal, now a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Captivating theaters, a hub of cultural activity, exquisite restaurants, and an abundance of trendy retail outlets make Downtown Rito Ottawa's retail, arts, and theater district. Shopping lovers won't be disappointed with the premier one-stop shopping spot, the Rito Center. After shopping up an appetite, unwind with fabulous food and views of the canal, or kick back and relax pub style. Downtown Rito is alive with entertainment all year round. It doesn't take long for visitors to discover that Downtown Rito is where culture lives.